This is the May 24th, 2018 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. It is 7 o'clock on the button here at the River Forest Village Hall. Calling the roll, Commissioner Pritz.
Here.
Commissioner Graham White.
Here.
Chairman Franek.
Here.
Commissioner Popowitz.
Here.
Commissioner Prestes.
Here.
Absent is Commissioner Reno Ogden. We do have a quorum.
Great. Do we have any public testimony and or comment? Approval of the meeting minutes, seeing as there's no public comment, for March 22nd. Does anyone have any changes? Do I hear a motion to accept?
I move to accept.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Okay, brochure map draft.
Yeah, so just as we get into it here, I just want to explain these things. So that everybody has an idea, and then you can see them however you like. This one here is a mock-up of version 1. Version 2 was circulated the other day. So it is helpful in terms of trying to get a feel for the size, I think. This would be the final size of the document, but some of the content is already been revised. And then I have a couple other things here. I apologize that this got a little complicated. This is how it would look folded, the final size, so you can get a feel for the way that they're proposing to put that together. As you can see, and as I was just talking with Chairman Franek, the idea would be the front cover and back cover. When it's folded, front cover, back cover, and then we'll open up to that welcome message, and then we'd have obviously the other pieces, and then the full map on the inside. So that's kind of how we propose to do that. This is, again, the size of the folded, but it's not the stock. So this is the proposed stock, but we could potentially order it. I'll pass this around just for look and feel. It's a heavier brochure paper, glossy type of a look and feel. That's about it on that.
Okay. In advance of the previously scheduled meeting, which was not held because of the lack of a quorum, many of us added comments. I believe, John, they've all been incorporated.
Yeah, that's right, too, and I guess it actually probably be worthwhile reviewing those as a group, and so let me do that right now.
Is what we have version 2? Is what was distributed in the package version 2?
That's correct. So the package that went out originally for the April meeting that was never held was version 1, and then the version that you would have received on Monday or Tuesday afternoon, I think Tuesday it finally got out, was version 2. Here's some of the things that I communicated to the graphic designer, all of which were incorporated. There's a typo in the award section that's been corrected. There are some general concerns just from various people about the font size, ease of readability. She did make some improvements in the second one. I also think it was probably difficult for some of you guys to get a feel for it by viewing this copy that was squeezed onto 11 by 17, because it's the largest I could print here, as well as get a feel for it in the PDF if you viewed it on your computer. So hopefully this is helpful here, and then it's even more readable in the new version. So I think we've given that good focus and kind of accomplished that.
Around the commission.
Yeah, we're still missing one. Two photographs?
We are. So on the photograph topic, I did talk to Commissioner Reno Ogden about that yesterday, and then on the phone today. He does plan to take not only those two, but perhaps see if he can better a couple of them, and we can get those dropped in. So that's all good news. I had her add in a couple of labels on the map for streets, because there was a couple of them that were missing, such as Park Avenue, Ashland, and Lathrop were mislabeled, some things like that. I just had her take a quick look and make sure that every street's at least labeled, even if it didn't have a home on it, for ease of,
orientation.
Exactly. Thank you. There was a suggestion, I think this one came from Commissioner Graham White, to delete the last sentence on 7051 Franklin.
Mistake.
just an error, so no problem there. We did change the numbering from version 1 to version 2. So in version 1, this is a little complicated. So on the descriptions on version 1, they ran numerically vertically by column. They now run sort of horizontally, but right. section by the page. Right. So you can kind of get an idea that way. Right. 1, 2, and then 3, 4, okay. things like that. Additionally, they were numbered in no particular order geographically on the map. So they now read north to south, which is just to give somebody a general idea of if you're looking for number 26, where on the map you might find that by making some sense order of it that way. There was edit on the Ben Badenaugh house.
Are you taking comments on this, or do you
let me just get through these revisions, and then I will. Yeah, absolutely. And then the John Pigott house, there was just a little typo there. And then from the consensus, not everybody commented on their preference of a cover, but those that did, there was 3 of the 6 commissioners that voiced a preference in the cover, and all of them liked cover 2, actually, so that worked out well. So we are proceeding with cover 2. It's got a nice watermark picture of a home there, pretty simpler lettering. I think it looks real sharp. That's it for those rounds of edits. So yeah, Dave, I don't know how you want to proceed, but if you want to, okay, sure.
Well, it's just a question on the numbering. You follow it, you get used to this pattern, and you get to 16, and it keeps going straight across, and then it's like building to something, and then it jumps to the top. Yeah. It just seems like it should go from 16 to Isabel Roberts' house being 17, and then follow down in the same type of pattern. It just seems, when you get down to the bottom, it's a little random.
So the Elias Day house is number 16,
yeah.
And then you think that number, in other words, you think the Isabel Roberts house should be number 17?
Well, let me say it like this. I'm open to a lot of ways of doing it.
Okay.
But making the Lozier house 17, and then making the C.C. Collins house 18, and the Davenport house 19, and I just, and then you jump up to the top, and then it starts going to the same pattern. It's just, the engineer in me cringes, so.
Okay.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
And just in terms of order.
Okay.
Maybe we can treat all the homes in one block, so that, for instance, after 10, you then go over to 24, 27. Those become 11 and 12.
Wait, 10 on which version?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
10 on the second version.
On the second version, I'm sorry.
Okay, see where 10 is?
Yep.
Okay, and then you head east and you've got 11, which is Trailside. 12, I would say 12 and 13 would numerically replace 24 and 27.
Wait, I'm sorry, say this again.
So what you're doing is you're still continuing the left to right progression. But what you're doing is you're treating them all within one block, so to speak, as sequential numbers. Wow. However people want to do it, but there should be some just logical way of non-randomly following.
I kind of lost you, I'm sorry.
Okay. So what you have is you've got 10.
Yep.
You go up to 11. This would become 12, 13, then 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. So that, for instance, I would suggest that after 10.
So the Seth Rhodes house is 10, and what is 11?
11 is Trailside. I would suggest that Trailside should be 7.
7. And how is it? Why is it 7?
What we're doing is we're going left to right, basically. So that.
Left to right all the way across?
Yeah.
Like, does Isabel Roberts become 3?
No,
it's
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
this is version
10.
One.
11, 12.
Oh, I'm sorry. So you're doing the order here. Yeah, those numbers would change.
Okay. Yes.
So you're orienting these to the map, but it still begs the question of how you would actually put the numbers on.
I would suggest you just move these so that they're sequential.
So that they're more in order with how they are on
yes.
the page.
Yes.
That I agree with. Okay. But I also think the numberings should change, which I don't know why I just don't do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, because we're.
I think
we're talking about two different
Dave's things. Talking about the numbering on the map. You're kind of talking about the numbering on the
descriptions. Dave's talking about how the map lines up with the picture.
Yeah, I'm open to it. And the designer and I talked about it for quite a while to try to come up with this, and I'm open to it. I just think maybe it makes sense to provide some more clear direction. You know, I tried to get them horizontal a little bit, and then I tried to get north to south.
Is the way you've got it folded where the center fold would occur?
That is correct.
Then what I would suggest is that if you got a centerfold like this, basically you got one through whatever like this, and then
that works for me as long as you don't have this terrible at the bottom, right? That throws me off. I'd also be okay with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think here's what people are going to do is they're going to look at the map, they're going to look at where they are, and they're going to say, hey, what's number 5?
Right.
So it just, you know, the pictures relative to the map doesn't matter as long as the number scheme is clear to them.
Absolutely.
Okay? So I think either one works. Okay? What I don't think works is what we have in terms of the number. Yeah.
Whichever way...
So in other words, John, we can view this as its own thing, and you number all the way down, and then this is its own thing, and you number all the way down.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
I don't think the two are quite balanced by that centerfold, which is
they're
park.
Not at all balanced.
But they're close,
but
maybe.
Closer.
Yeah.
Or if there's another way to do it, that's okay, too. I just want it to be visually easier to use so that people don't hunt and peck. And I would think that the people are going to look at the map first.
That's right. I agree.
That's what
I think you're going to do. I think you're going to look at the map, and then you're going to decide where you want to go.
Yeah.
Or where you are, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we want to go to the area by the Trailside Museum, because that's where all the cool houses are.
Right. Or what people may want to do, and this is perfectly great, and I really like the designation by little, you know, squares, dependent upon the architect involved showing it on the map. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes perfectly good sense.
Okay. So there's something to be said for the center line, which I suppose could be accomplished, and just hear me out here. If we, instead of labeling from north to south, labeled from west to east.
That's fine.
So that...
What do you mean labeled?
Numbered.
So
the top row, would it be 1, 2, 3, 4? Or would it be
I'm actually just talking about the map right now.
On the map. Oh, on the map. You're talking about...
So if you look at home 27, which is the Winslow house, it would become number 1.
Yeah.
And then you'd have the Chauncey Williams house number 2. And then perhaps
Trailside
3 and come south, right?
Yep.
4, 5, 6, 7.
Yep.
And then we'd bounce over to the
Methodist
Church.
What would be one?
Winslow,
which is 27 on the map.
Oh, I see. So you'd be going in columns and numbering and then down the column.
Yes.
All right. So
that makes sense.
Going west to east.
Yeah, and then you've got an orientation.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So
but
then
that throws off the number scheme.
We get
unless you do the number of columns, because you did the numbering of columns on the map.
If somebody has a different suggestion, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, 30 then becomes the church. But then you get into a little bit of a problem at Keystone, because I'm not sure if you go all the way up to the Butler House in the 1100 block and then come south and do it that way. This seems to be the problem, is the Keystone Edgewood blocks.
Yeah.
Where it's just a little tightly clustered.
I'm not sure if I can comment, but about 25 years ago, there was a similar thing done by the very similar, except it was yellow. You were the copy of it?
No.
It might be a good idea to see what they did then.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
And somewhere I have a copy, but where I have it, I don't know.
Yeah, and I wonder too if it was produced by the village or...
Is it in the book?
There's also a book.
Which is also numbered.
Yeah.
And I know that starts up on Thatcher, I think, and works.
By book, you mean the survey?
No, I'm talking about the Jeanette.
The Fields book from the 80s.
Yeah, that's also.
There's a little map in the Fields book that,
yes.
you know, that resembles this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a copy. Oh, Jan has a copy right on her.
There you go.
Boom.
How's that labeled? Let me see that.
Is she?
Wasn't sausages.
I don't think.
Yeah.
As long as it's consistent.
The Winslow house is one with her.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't then... It's not totally west to east, because as you get into that cluster block of Keystone, it starts to become west to east, but then also south to north. Maybe trying to envision a little bit more how you'd walk through there is almost what it looks like, because you'd start in the River Oaks Off-Run Loop, and then you'd come, you know, maybe up Edgewood, and then start walking north.
So you're going like this.
Yeah, you know, because that's almost how it's numbered, because then, you know, it's got the 500 block of Keystone labeled from south to north and west to east. So it starts to complicate a little bit there. There's 75 properties here.
Yeah.
But obviously, I would gander to bet that most of the 33 that we have here are there, but like I said, I'm happy to do it any which way, but at this point I think it'd be best for us to relabel them and give that to the designer to make happen, you know.
We just need to figure out however we want it.
Let's just think about it from the perspective of how it's used, right? I mean, the way it's going to be used is, you know, you've got this great key. This is a Frank Lloyd Wright house. Let's face it, a lot of people are going to, that's going to be their starting point, right? Because that's one of the big attractions to the area. And Oak Park has made such a public thing of that successfully and in a good way, right? That people are going to be looking at that as the area they want to go in. So that's going to be kind of densely visited in that area by the Trailside Museum, you know, where you've got four of them clustered. And then you've got some just east of that, right? That's going to be sort of your starting point, right? The other thing is, when you look at the numbers, you have to know, it has to be easy to get to the descriptions. Now, there's only 33 on here, so it's not like that's hard. But if you look at like 20 and you want to know where to go for 20, it's kind of counterintuitive when you look at the way the numbering is done right now.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my feeling.
Yeah, and I think that's right. If the idea here is that I think if you start on the map and you find a house, then you want to be able to look at the descriptions, and it should be a little more natural, perhaps, where number 27 is in the descriptions. So having those in the numerical order, I think, helps
you,
that.
You can also group them by archetype. I mean, everyone's going to want to see Wright, and they want to see the Wright. Houses close to each other, and then then anybody who's like an architectural fan is going to say Drummond. Cool.
They are
right?
Color coordinated that
they're
way.
They're color coordinated, but they're not grouped by color.
Okay.
I think that makes it.
You know, I would put all the Frank Lloyd Wrights in the upper left, the upper left hand corner, because it's going to be the first thing they're going to want to look at. I put the Drummonds below that, and I would put the unknown architects on the right side, and I would put the architects that are known but not Drummond and Frank Lloyd Wright in the upper right, and then I'd put the unknown at the bottom on the right. And honestly, how you translate that into numbers on the map, anything is good for me. It's good. Truthfully, it's I think people will care because they've been trained on this by Oak Park, they'll want to see by Architect. And I think they've just done a great job of that.
As proof that this could be discussed all day, let me throw out the fact that I don't favor the idea that was just articulated, simply because I think it creates kind of a, it's going to create like an unknown architect ghetto down in the lower right, and kind of come across, I think, as almost like I understand some of these judgments have been made outside of this commission, but it's going to kind of communicate in some ways unnecessarily a kind of a value preference and judgment. And I get we may be able to guess that we could do that in a way that's consistent with society's value preference and judgment, or the user's value preference and judgment, but I would just do something uncontroversial and consistent with the logic of the visual display. You know, we have a map, it lists the places left to right. We could display the places relatively left to right, sort of like they are on the map. It's a rule that's kind of neutral and adoptable and uncontroversial, and allows you to have kind of an interesting mix where the rights are sprinkled among some of the other architects. It's sort of like the village itself. Just my two cents. There isn't a right answer here.
No.
Yeah, I agree with Brian, and because I think if you go down Edgewood, you're going to hit Drummond's and Wright. So no. I mean, there's a mix on every block. So you know, just now, throw them all in with the numbers.
What I would like to. What about guiding the people? How about making the Winslow House one, which everyone knows, and then, since where the way the houses are grouped there, guide them from one house to another, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, regardless of the architect. Guide them, and you're actually going to take in a pretty good swath of houses there. Now, where you go beyond that, I don't know, but I would be open to suggestions, but yeah. just to start them at the Winslow House, and then guide them across, and then they'd be hitting a fair number
right.
of houses.
Like connect the dots left to right. Maybe we're not saying the exact same thing, but we're roughly on the same page. Like you said, you'd go 27, 24, 28, 23, 22, 20, up to 11, down to 30, then like maybe 32.
Any guiding, you can make the same argument then, which is now you're going to have a ghetto of, not, you know, if you're down in the lower left, are you going to go up to the places around Concordia? Or are you going to go to the far east of the village and see, you know, that cluster of houses, you know, south of Concordia?
Depends on your level of interest.
Have a presentation that tracks the actual physical layout of the houses in the real world, which seems to have a pretty good bit, like kind of a pretty objective, neutral, and helpful basis in reality.
And you're hitting these houses, they're all close to each other. So if you're walking and you're tired, you can cover a lot of architectural styles, a lot of architects, a lot of styles in a relatively small group. What, 3 blocks, 4 blocks? You're going to hit a lot of them. So let's just guide them, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc.
And 17 would be the last one, in other words?
Well,
probably, because you'd go left or right.
Yeah, we're going to go left.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree with Brian and Al in that I think mixing the architects together doesn't create a value judgment going left to right. And what it does is it exposes people to a number of different styles, some of which are pretty interesting. You know, the really old Thatcher homes, I think, are largely unknown in terms of the architects, but they're all, you know, magnificent structures,
sure.
Whether it's Trailside or the Blocking House or, you know, the one on 600 Block of Keystone. Whatever, they're all very cool homes, and as such, that plus, if you go left to right, it's got the benefit of you start with the Winslow House, which is clearly the most visible structure in the village.
Yeah.
So, if we have a consensus in some of that, I'd like, and as close as we can get, I mean that sincerely.
Yeah, me too.
I'd like to run through that and number them.
Yep.
So, stop me if I need to be. All right, so 27 is going to be 1.
That's Winslow House.
And then what are we doing? 28 is 2?
24.
Just imagine you're walking it and trying to hit all the houses as efficiently as you can.
And that's why
you hit 28 before you hit 24.
If you come through the Winslow loop and then you start walking north on Edgewood.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah,
I don't care.
But if
28 is 2 then?
I don't.
You're going to walk?
24 is 3.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Sure.
23 is 4.
Yep.
22 is 5.
Yep.
20 is 6.
Yep.
11 is 7.
Yep.
7 is 8.
11 is...
Wait, 11?
Are you going to go up and then down, or are you going to go...
I think so,
this
because...
is for walking.
Because when you're at... When you're at the Isabel Roberts house, which used to be 20 and is now 6, you're on the north half of Edgewood, so you're probably going to the trail side next.
And then you go over on Chicago, and then you go down Keystone. Yeah. And so 7, yeah. 12, 13, 18.
So 7 is going to become 8.
Yep.
12 is going to come to 9.
Yep.
13 is 10.
Yep.
18, 11.
Yep.
21, 12. 25, 13. 26, 14. 29, 15. And then the church, 30 is 16.
Mm-hmm.
Then are we going over the tracks? We're going 32 and 33?
Yeah, I just bang them out.
So there's
there.
17, yeah. And 32 becomes 17, and 33 becomes 18?
Yep.
Then go way up to 2.
No, after that, I don't know.
We'll just go, you got to cover those, and the only place to do is here.
So 2, or would you do the doublement 1?
So just to point something out here, what you did with that almost now fits to the left of the center fold.
Yeah.
Which is good,
benefit,
right?
Yeah.
Because now all the descriptions are
close to
those houses.
Let's
right?
talk about the descriptions next, but that's a very good point. So is 1 or 2 going to become 19, which is your next number? That's the question.
I would do 2.
Okay.
I would do 2, then 3, then 4.
So 2 becomes 19, 3 becomes 20, 4 becomes 21.
And 5.
5 becomes 22.
Then 1.
1 becomes 23.
Then 6.
24.
8.
25.
31.
26.
19.
27.
14.
28.
9.
29.
10.
30.
15.
31.
16 and 17.
32. 33.
Right.
If anybody would like to see that, you can look at my
business. I never want to discuss it again.
Okay.
Good.
Okay, great.
Close that.
All right. That is how the physical...
I agree exactly. We're not going to beat that.
Thanks to all those following along at home. I'm sure that was a lot of fun.
Now the orientation should sort of follow that.
So let's talk about the numbers. So compared to how laid out now, does everybody agree that 1 through 14 is in a comfortable spot, being those first two columns?
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with the whole thing.
Well, when you
say
in a comfortable spot, but they have to now be lined up with the Winslow house is now in the upper left-hand corner.
Right.
Yeah, but just the numbering.
Just the orientation.
You just mean the layout.
I mean the numbers. Obviously, one will still be here,
yeah.
But it'll now be the description and picture of the Winslow house.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Fine.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, do people have changes to the numbers of the descriptions at all?
To the description, like the text of the descriptions?
No. To where number 18 is. Should it be?
Oh, I understand.
You know what I'm saying? Like how they're plotted.
The order.
No, so 1 through 16 seem right to me. And
okay.
Then we go back to what we said before, which is what is now the Isabel house is 17, and it follows the same type of numbering pattern down. You'll have two houses out of position, so to speak, which I think we've said we're going to be 32 and 33. Is that right? But...
I'd lay it out exactly as it is now because it follows. It's similar to what we just to the map and to what we just did, which is you sort of start up out here, and you run your way through, kind of left to right, and then over,
yeah.
And then through this way. I mean, you could obviously stop here, then go up here, then run down, and then track backwards. But I think this is more natural. But
I agree with Brian.
I don't agree with. But the majority.
The difference being is that the pictures in the individual house locations would change based upon their renumbering.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
Michael doesn't like the order of the.
In other words, I think
I'm okay with up to 16, here. But then when you've got 17, 17 would now become, I believe, what is 32, but that would be that house. And now where does 33 go? Does it go where the C.C. Collins house is now?
So just to be clear, you think 17, which is now here, should be here?
No, I think seven. I think when you, well, I'm okay with everything to the left of the fold.
Yeah,
but
right.
After you get past the what is now the Elias Day House, okay, the next house, number 18, number 17, should be where the Isabel Roberts house.
So you want to jump from 16 to what? 16 to what number would be there next? So if I'm going
16 would be, well, you have to count it down and figure it out. 16,
so he's saying, he's saying 16 would be here,
and then 17 is where?
You're right. You're counting left to right, going down.
So if you're going left to right and reading across,
no,
go.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
He's good with it. I think what he's trying to say is that he's comfortable with the way this is numbered.
Yeah.
But then when you flip to this side of the center fold,
right.
He would restart up here.
Right. Yes.
So it'd be 17, 18, 18, 20. Yeah. You're good with that too?
No.
No.
I understand it.
Okay.
And people keep thinking I don't, but I do.
Okay.
But my point is, if one was reading left to right, you would go 16, and then the next number would not be 17. It would be
30
something.
It'd be in this case, it'd be 30.
On the other side of the fold.
It'd be 30, because across the bottom row, you'd have 30, 31, 32, 33.
But because of the fold, you're saying it wouldn't be weird.
I don't think it would be weird, no. Because actually, if you look at where the fold is, most of these houses that you just did, the way you numbered them, would line up exactly, except for those boxes.
That's a good point. Right now, the way that I have this...
Nobody walks around with a map like this. They walk around with
I have this folded imperfectly.
Yeah.
But I right now I have the dividing line as Park Avenue. Just the way I have this folded. It's imperfect,
right.
But I think it's close.
Yeah.
So,
yes,
1 through 16 all fall on that side of the fold.
Well, 17 and 18 also fall on that side of the fold, and that's what makes
more,
it a problem.
More than that. So 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22 are also on that side of the fold.
But they're at the top, so yes, I get you. Get what you're saying.
I'm just,
let me ask a question, because I think this is self-evident, but I want to make sure we're all on the same page. Well, let's look at 16, which is currently the Elias Day House. I assume because we are renumbering these, and the Elias Day House becomes whatever the next to the last one is. It's either 32 or 33.
Which one is Elias Day now?
16.
The current 16 is Elias Day?
Current 16
yeah.
is Elias
okay.
Day.
Yeah.
So what happens is whatever 16 is in the renumbering, the picture and the description would go in that slot as number 16.
We said that. We all agreed to
okay.
that. Yeah.
Which would in
now,
this case be the church.
Graphically what I would do to address your concern is I would just put some kind of, the artist will know what to do, put some kind of a bar there, some kind of a line or something that's clear. You've done this side of the map and now you're doing this side of the map. And it would be a little bit imperfect, but nothing's going to be perfect here.
Could I ask you?
And the numbers make sense in terms of being able to find them.
Could I ask what number 17, the new number 17, what house is that?
The Blocky House.
Which is currently what?
32.
Yep.
So that's still on the left side?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
As is the 33... Which
and
is the hatch
three,
house.
And 2, 3, and 4, which now line up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little imperfect, but nothing's going to ever be perfect.
So,
How
do people feel about that?
Let's go for it.
Yeah, it's fine by me. I have no strong feelings other than to make it logically consistent.
Right.
And I understand what Michael is saying, and I'm fine with it.
Okay, so 1 through 16 stays put.
Right.
And then we're going to go back up to the top corner, and that's going
to
be...
Up to currently the Isabel Roberts house.
So this is the description. 20 becomes 17.
Yes.
21 becomes 18.
Yes.
Yeah.
22, 19.
Yeah.
23, 20. 24, 21. 25, 22. 26, 23, 27, 24, 28, 25, 29, 26, and then 18 becomes 27?
Yeah.
Yep.
30 becomes 28?
Yep.
31 becomes 29?
Yep.
And then 17 becomes 30?
Yes.
And to address what Brian's saying, I'm saying have the artist put some kind of a little separator between the left and the right.
Yeah.
And it's clear that you've started over.
Makes good sense.
You know what he means, John? Like
on the fold down here,
he's saying, like, there would be some kind of gray bar or something like that.
Something.
You have a natural divide. Visually.
Yeah, you have a natural divide, and it just says, here's the stuff on the left and here's the stuff on the right. And it's not quite perfect, you know, but you know what? It's when you look at this, it really, the way you've numbered them, it really clusters it nicely, and it really does line up pretty nicely.
I think the geographic numbering helps for the walking, walkability.
I think that's a great idea.
We made it.
Okay, a couple of things.
Are you moving on from that?
No, okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to mention a couple of things
sure.
in that. The first of which... I've had a couple of conversations with the village president since our last meeting. She indicated yesterday that the village board has approved the $5,000 budget for whatever we want to do in terms of public education, with the indication that if we have, in fact, additional requirements that make sense to get the word out, that additional funding may be forthcoming as well.
I think we should go to Disney World and discuss that.
Nice.
I think maybe landscaping for any people whose houses appear on the map. No, it was a joke.
Well said. Well said.
You gotta wait till.
Okay.
For education, meaning what? Like, how would we anticipate?
It's public outreach kinds of things. I mean, which kind of leads into the next topic, which is discussion of additional ways to protect significant properties. And one of the things is the request has been made to list, and this is sort of, it's been the initial request by a member of the public is currently with us, has been expanded in my conversations with the village president to indicate, as a way of trying to get ahead of the curve so that we're not playing defense once a property has been listed, once a property has actually gone under contract, that properties which are available for purchase and are either significant or have received awards be listed on our preservation website. Now, one of the things that the...
So the house is, when Carla comes in and says a new house has gone up, that's a significant property, it would then go on the website?
Mm-hmm. If it's a significant property or we've given a preservation award. Now, where this comes from is a lot of discussions in terms of figuring out ways to get ahead of the curve. Al and I attended a traditional building conference. It was held over the 19th Century Club in late April, sponsored by Old House Journal magazine. And at that, I was able to make some connections with a number of regional and state preservation officials and had some pretty in-the-weeds conversations about how to get ahead of the curve. And the concept of using a listing of these homes to get the word out would be something that would be beneficial. That would specifically address the following point. On 747 William, the village received a communication from a young attorney currently living in Chicago, a young architect currently living in Chicago, indicating that he was interested in purchasing a home to redo in River Forest as the residence for himself and his family, and that he would have loved to have had an opportunity to purchase 747 William. But it was not generally known to him and others. So that's where that process lies.
So this would be a way to educate the public when a significant property, so that if there are people out there who are like preservationists searching for these kinds of properties, they could search River Forest Historic Properties for sale. And this page would pop up.
Same way.
Google would.
Same way if you search Frank Lloyd Wright Conservancy and you get a national list of Wright properties that are for sale. Same gig.
When we discuss this, can we divide the whatever ideas come up into two columns? One for those would not require a change in the ordinance, and then if we have things that require change in the ordinance, to separate those out.
Sure.
Because I have a couple of more ideas.
This would not require a change of the ordinance, and the thought was that it would basically just require a consent by the village board, but not necessarily, you know, a formal vote in a large.
Put it into the
That it's to acknowledge that this is part of the general laundry list of things we are tasked to do to help in the preservation of the architectural heritage of the community.
Seems like a great idea.
Yeah.
I have a couple of other suggestions that I thought about.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know, because this also ties into when properties come on the market, and that is to either send, you know, when it comes to make sure that the listing agent knows that it's a significant property, and so the people ask about it, that realtor can say yes. I mean that, but if you're interested in demolition, you need to check in on it because if there is at this point a 6-month waiting period.
Form letter.
Mm-hmm.
Makes perfectly good sense.
Well, a form letter to the realtor.
To the realtor. Yeah. Just a nice letter.
I mean,
just
is there any way we can get buyers to be aware? And this is,
well,
I think,
that's what it would be.
But that counts on the realtor telling them. You know what I'm saying? And is there any way to require that there's some kind of note that it's in the listing? For example, if you do a listing and it's a significant property, it has to say significant property, or the sign has to say significant property.
No. I don't know if you can, in the sense. From dealing with realtors, commercial and residential, for a while, they're very jealous of guarding their listings. So they get very nervous when anybody has got contact with their client, because they don't want to feel that the value they bring to the table is somehow lessened. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I see the guy who bought 747.
Sarvis?
Yeah, Jarvis.
Sarvis.
His first name. I'm trying to remember his first name.
Rob.
I see Rob walking his dog. He lives within a couple blocks of me. And I've seen him a few times now and gotten, I'd say, friendly enough with him. And the last time I saw him, I said, the house had just come down. And I said, they just tore down the house. He said, I said, boy, did you step in this? And
he said, did you what?
Boy, did you ever step in this, buying this house? He said, you know what? I really did.
Yeah.
He said the pain of it was horrible, and I agree. Good, but the point is, I'm not sure he. I get the sense he wouldn't have bought it if he'd had a better sense of what he was going to be coming up against. I mean, he really thought that the people in that neighborhood would say to him, "Cool, increasing the value of the block."
But he's a developer, and he's a professional. And he should understand that there is an ordinance, and if he were, and he knew what he was getting into.
I'm not quite sure of that, Carl. I've gotten to know him well enough now that he's got no reason to lie to me anymore. And I'm just, he really didn't realize that it was a much bigger step that he took. And I don't know, maybe this educated everybody. Maybe the fact that he went through that put everybody on notice. But if there was some way for people who are buying houses, they're buying significant houses, that comes with all kinds of restrictions on them. And I don't know what you do about that.
I would suggest it's sort of modest restrictions, opposed to all kinds. In my sense, and this is, I think, where you and I may differ, Michael, I have a hard time believing that a developer who did even a modicum of due diligence, and particularly one who lived in the area, would be unfamiliar with the fact that that block received a village award and was in the local press for the better part of 8 or 10 months, particularly if he was interested in purchasing in that area. I find it hard to believe that someone credibly could say, gee, I wasn't aware. personal opinion.
I'm a 20-year resident of the village, and I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I did not realize that that was a significant block. All I'm saying is, how does it hurt people who are buying homes to know that they're buying significant property?
No, I understand.
You know, I mean, is there any way to close that loop to potential buyers that it's a significant property? It might even be good for people who are not developers. This isn't just about informing developers, but wouldn't you like to know you're buying a
significant
property?
If you're buying a landmark property.
Yeah, that's different.
It's different, but there is a note you have to put in the contract signed off by both the buyer and the seller to that they understand that this is a significant, you know, this is a landmark property and there are certain restrictions.
Who requires that?
It's in the ordinance. In the River Forest Ordinance.
I'm kind of an interested party.
If you could please just lean to the microphone. Your name and address, please. Thank you.
I'm a little bit of an interested party because, you know, I got the Preservation Award last year for the house in the corner. And I've had some experiences with trying to sell it. But we've gone through a whole, let me kind of give you a little bit more background. I grew up in a 500-year-old house. Mm-hmm. My parents bought a new house that was only 200 years old, and then they didn't like new houses, so they bought one that's 400 years old. And I inherited the 400-year-old house. And I kept it for 12 years because I didn't want to sell it. It was just south of Bath in England. And the house was listed, which meant it was a Class 2 listing, which meant I could do things on the inside, but I certainly couldn't do anything on the outside. If it's a Class 1, you can't do anything on the inside. And I wanted to change a window because the way it was designed 400 years ago, it collected water. And I went through months of arguing with the people necessary. And I couldn't get, they dug up all sorts of reasons why I couldn't change the window. Now, here we have nothing. You know, there is this nebulous, it's a significant house, but we have no means of protecting it. And if you look at, I've gone to a lot of time and expense to try to restore the house, not restore it, but to make it into a good example of a Victorian house. And you were here when I argued for being allowed to build a 24-foot high garage. I went through that. I'm not making any money out of it. If anything, I'm not making, I'm going to lose money out of the whole thing. But I wanted to do it right. Now, when I come to try and find realtors, three quarters of them, a house is a house. You just tell them, well, it's a Victorian, Queen Anne, probably Eastlake, and it's a good example, and such like and so forth. Majority of them couldn't care less. How quickly can I sell it? How low a price, and I've gone through this, we ended up going through eight realtors, inviting them in, eight realtor companies, and they were very impressed because it looks nice, but when you're trying to sell or promote a good example of Victorian architecture. It's not a museum piece. We didn't intend it to be. Now, there's one on Grove right now in Oak Park, which is absolutely a museum. We tried to make it as modern, but maintaining the Victorian look of it. And one of the problems we're running into, for example, is the fact that, our kitchen is not gourmet enough. No white marble and things like this. And the cabinets, please paint the cabinets white. We wanted to have a Victorian theme to the kitchen, but it's modern, it has all the modern features. So you need to somehow educate the realtor community. And if you've got something to You know, if you have some method of doing this, I think it'd be a good idea because
okay.
many
okay.
of yeah. So,
your name and address, please, sir.
Huh?
Your name.
David Burns, 146 Keystone.
Thank you.
One of the questions that I would have is perhaps just so we know where we are from a legal standpoint, can we ask the village attorney to determine to what extent, if we want to, we have the legal ability to require that some designation be part of a listing?
Or if there's another way to require that a buyer be made.
It strikes me that we may not have the ability to do it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm
but maybe
it's a softball for the village attorney.
But that's my thought, but what I want to do is that'll sort of foreclose a lot of gnashing.
But maybe then to the point we can come at it from the other side, which is use some of that $5,000 to bring in realtors. And to say, look, you need to understand if you're selling historic property.
Just to be clear, the question is to what extent can the HBC require that the designation of a significant home?
Significant property appear as part of a property listing.
Or be communicated in another way to a potential buyer.
I think we're going to get, I'd love to be way wrong here. I think we're going to get negative interest from the realtor community.
Yeah.
Regarding what they're going to perceive as a potentially business losing intrusion / lecture. This is just sand in the gears of their business. I mean, imagine if we told all the used car salesmen that
Justin would come in and yell at them. I asked them to yell at them. But I mean,
why would they want to come and spend an evening listening to us give them a bunch of reasons why it's going to be harder for
give them historical information about the village.
I didn't even finish my sentence, but go ahead.
They're
not
going
to.
What happens if we go out to them?
However we do it. I mean,
don't realtors get together?
They do. I
for lunch or something, and somebody go out there
and I'm more than happy.
Make a presentation.
I'm more than happy to do it. My sense is, I think where Brian was headed is I think many realtors will just view this as interference.
That's what you see.
And difficulty, and as such, they're going to say, and they're going to be vehemently opposed to it. I think there are probably other ways to communicate it.
Such as?
You know, I've been asking for the last several meetings for people to come up with ideas, and I'm still waiting for that raft.
Well, actually, I thought you had an idea that came out when we had just barely a quorum. That was reaching out to the community.
Yeah.
And I kind of saw this as an extension of that, which is if we could help them to understand what significant properties are, they get to say this is a significant property, which might be, have its own positive aspect to them of being able to say, you know, this is a significant property. You should pay $10,000 more gladly for it,
to be honest,
right? Because of its historic value, right?
To be honest, Michael, it doesn't increase the value.
Anything increases the value depending on how people perceive it.
My experience is there's a very small number of realtors who service our community and or Oak Park who deal in the vast majority of homes that are significant.
Yes.
There's maybe 4 or 5. And they probably take care of 85% to 90% of the listings. Mm-hmm. They're fully aware of them.
I think they
do mention it already. So
this is knowable too. We can just ask them. We could ask Tony and Kathy. We can ask Steve Schering. We can ask the folks we know these people.
They'll
tell us.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to just hear their perspective off the record.
Why don't we do that rather than do the village attorney route? I'm thinking. Because I think I already have a sense what the answer is going to be. You know, it's probably borderline, but you're just going to be viewed as messing with somebody's business. You may not want to do it.
I'll just add, I mean, I see socially 5 realtors a week. I'll just ask them.
Yeah.
It's not like it's going to be definitive. Yeah.
You're going to ask them what?
I'm going to say, help me understand how you approach the purchase and sale of a property when it's historic as opposed to not, and, you know, sort of here. And I'm going to ask, you know, when a property is a historic property, you know, kind of get some sense of what their knowledge even is as to whether it is or isn't, whether they care or don't, whether they see it as helpful or hurtful to their ability to close the deal. Just try to get a better understanding of how the fact of a historically significant home factors into their thinking. Nothing controversial.
That'd be really interesting.
I am speculating to some degree, and I'd be just, you know, obviously what I learn isn't going to be definitive of, you know, I'm not going to conduct a statistically significant sample or anything, but learn something.
No, I think it'd be very interesting. Yeah. Why would they lie? You know what?
They're
all motivated by the same thing. You
know? These are my friends. They're not going to lie to me.
Can I ask about some questions about what to do about a property like 1123 Franklin? That's been on the market, off the market for like the past 5 or 6 years. It's a shell. It's a significant property. There's no, you know, all the walls are out. There's no plumbing in there.
That's right. I've seen that.
That is not a multiple listing right now. I don't know who's selling that.
Mm-hmm.
But should the commission remind whoever is selling this that this is listed as a significant property and there are certain restrictions that must be met if this is being sold as a teardown, which it certainly has been?
Just one little point I could add, and that is, in talking to the realtors, I wanted to find one that knew what a Victorian was and could explain why the closets are small. Some of the features that Victorian has is not really suitable for today. And so I said, okay, where would you list it? And out of the 8, 6 said, I'll need the multiple listing service. And then it goes to all the other ones. None of them knew about Old House Journal or, well, 2 did, right? And so there are 4, I've got it listed on 4 house, historic properties. There are four that I know of, 4 websites that are specifically aimed at the sort of properties you're talking about.
Yeah, there are numbers, some of which are specifically targeted, Wright properties. There are some, such as Old House Journal, which feature, it's either 9 or 12 houses a month. It's a bi-monthly magazine. It's either 9 or 12 per issue. There's obviously a lead time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's less immediate than getting it in front of another organization. I've spoken with the educational director of Landmarks Illinois, and to the extent that something is viewed as, quote, in danger, unquote, then they will consider putting it on a list. But it's got to be endangered in order to do that. So that's a nice, you know, it's good when they do that, but that's already sort of beyond the point that we're thinking about. So
I mean, if we talk about this from the goal, you know, I guess what I'm interested in achieving is having people who buy houses knowing what door they're opening. That's the bottom line. If we're saying we don't think we can make realtors, and the conversations will really help, if we don't think we can make realtors our allies in this, then I still think we should ask the question of the village attorney. Is there any way to require some sort of notification, you know, relative to the historic nature of the home?
I think.
And I just think that what we need to do sometimes is to make sure that the information that the public has, I'm a big believer, if the public has information, they're going to act on it properly. That's why I loved your idea of the website.
I think some realtors are, in fact, our allies, and they understand the process. I do think that there are others, however, such as the owner of 747 William, who will say, "Gee, I wasn't aware." Even if they happen to be aware,
I'm not gonna bash him. I mean,
I'm not bashing.
Yeah,
but I'm merely saying that there are, in fact, folks out there in order to get a sale will say, gee, I wasn't aware, even if they were.
I'll take people at their word in this case. He stepped into something that he really didn't, as far as I can tell, he had no idea. And you know what? I don't see how that wouldn't apply. People should understand what they're getting into. And I think in the realm of educating people, it's got a lot of different aspects to it. Some are saying this is valuable and you should value it. And some of this is saying, just be aware of what this is when you buy it.
You know, one thing that occurs to me is everybody, and I mean everybody these days, who's buying a house, Googles the address they're considering buying. And if it were the case that by putting the information on our website in some way that actually, I'm no search engine optimization engineer, but this is like, if when someone typed in 530 Keystone, they got not only, you know, the MLS or Redfin.com, but got River Forest Historic Preservation Commission list of historic houses, that would get that information in their face in a totally uncontroversial way. I mean, no, I don't think, I mean, I really anticipate zero pushback if we want to put on the HBC website a list of houses that are historically significant that happen to be for sale as we speak. I'm sure we got to run it up whatever flagpole. Who cares?
The thing about Google is you usually have to find a way to optimize where you're going to appear on the list.
Right? Yeah. If we're number 27, right, forget
it. If you're off the first page, people aren't going to see it. In fact, there's lots of studies that if you're out of the first few, you're not going to see it. And what's going to pop up first is Zillow.
Redfin.
Right?
Yeah.
Just absolutely no question. With a historic property, I did this a lot when we were creating this list, right, to see if there were sources out there to give me information beyond what we had from other, you know, like in our book, right, in the survey. And it you can get it. I mean, it'll pop up.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, maybe that's an interesting idea, some way to optimize this. You know, does the village attach itself in any way to any of these listing services? You know what I mean? I mean, do we... You know, are houses in River Forest only listed in the MLS or through realtors? You know,
As far as I know, the village isn't involved in any listing.
I mean, it may be as simple as if we are able to put on our website houses, historic significant houses that are for sale, just literally entering the text in a certain way that will be indexed appropriately by Google. Could go a long way. I 100% get everything you say, and I'm with you. I mean,
but you could take some of this $5,000 and pay somebody and say, I want this to come up with people. You know, you pay a monthly fee for that. You know, they help make all that happen.
Comment upon one thing, I have no intent to bash Mr. Sarvis. I'm merely using him as an example of someone who purchased the property and said he didn't know. Just as
there are, know what he stepped into.
Therefore, there are also realtors who say, gee, I didn't know. As well,
we've had examples of realtors who list houses that are not Frank Lloyd Wright houses as Frank Lloyd Wright houses. You know, I mean, that to me is bad. You know, it's all a matter of keeping it straight in the public's mind so they know what they're buying. That's all. Yeah. A well-informed public, I think, makes smart decisions.
Not trying to demonize or bash anyone.
So I think that, you know, all I'm looking for is a way to get this information into the hands of people.
Okay.
Would a little reminder, a very nice note to owners of significant properties just to remind them that there are changes to the ordinance that were put in, 2 years ago now, and particularly in terms of demolition, just to remind people. I mean, people forget.
But they have the same motivation as realtors, which is to not have this become public. That's my problem. If they're selling a house, you know, the owner of 747 could have put a covenant in his contract saying it can't be torn down. You know, he didn't do that.
When Chairman Zarowski sent out a letter to people regarding changes to the ordinance and significant properties, was that after the changes to the ordinance? Check. I think it may have been.
I do believe that the final changes to the ordinance were communicated. I can look it up and I'll see what I come across.
Sure, but
see what I can get to.
Or the frequently asked questions or something, just a reminder.
We just need to remember we're operating in a world of very full bandwidth. Mm-hmm. I mean, send out 1,000 letters that are from the HPC about statutory changes to the regulatory code. Like, maybe we get 2 reads.
Well, we had the person come in with their house. Remember, they're making a change, and they asked us opinions, and they said, can I ask you a question? Why is this historically significant? The floors are uneven, the roof leaks,
I think that's a great example of what Brian's talking about, because those homeowners, I know for certain, received multiple certified letters regarding the ordinance changes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't be quite certain as to what Chairman Franick's asking about the specifics. I'm sure we have copies of the letters. My computer's being slow now, but, you know, we could find out exactly what those said, but I know they're all sent, you know, put them in the mail.
So. What I learned when I was in politics a lot is that a lot of people, very intelligent people, live in their own bubble.
Yeah.
And there are some things that don't penetrate that bubble. And a lot of times there are issues that have been discussed and talked about in the press and so on and so forth. You think everybody knows this. How could they? Not a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And I've encountered that many times. And I suspect what we're talking about here doesn't penetrate a lot of bubbles.
Well, and that's, Al, I think...
I
think that's a perfect way of saying what we're talking, what I'm concerned about. If we can get people to understand what they're signing up to when they buy historic property...
And I totally understand.
That's the challenge.
Right.
That's the challenge.
Okay.
All right. Other business. I'm going to pass around... copy of a letter that Commissioner Popowitz sent to Wednesday Journal. And I read it yesterday and had some concerns.
Okay.
As follows, and I want to sort of get something as a clarification on the record for the purpose of those folks who perhaps don't attend our meetings, but do listen to our recorded meetings. As longtime chair of the Historic Preservation Commission, I've always encouraged members of the commission and the public to express their opinions, including dissent. However, as chair, I believe that I must, for the benefit of those who listen to our recorded meetings, correct a factual misstatement in Commissioner Al Popowitz's letter published by the Wednesday Journal yesterday, May 23rd. Concerning the demolition of the significant home at 747 William. Commissioner Popowitz stated in his letter that the commissioner reluctantly, quote, signed off, unquote, on the demolition. In fact, the commission denied the applicant's request for approval of the proposed demolition and imposed the maximum 6-month delay provided in the current ordinance. In recognition of a likely potential demolition, a majority of the commission voted to shorten the period of delay only if the applicants agreed to certain listed design conditions for the new structure. The applicants did not respond to those conditions, and the maximum delay was not reduced. This correction is important, as Commissioner Popowitz's letter may give the wrong impression that the commission approved the applicant's demolition. The facts indicate otherwise.
I think that's a legitimate criticism, and I agree. I accept that fully.
And that's something that my intent is to take that statement and to just count up the number of words and send it off to the Wednesday Journal for those folks that read it. Because otherwise, I think a casual observer who doesn't follow the ins and outs and the nuts and bolts of what we do may somehow believe that we approve the process. And if we approve the process, then why do we keep rehashing it? Why do we make a big deal about it? And there's a fine distinction, but I think it's a material distinction. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate your sentiment, Al.
I guess I conflated what was going on here.
Yeah.
That was but really a purpose of my article here. This is not that's why this was not a full page article that I sometimes write. I conflated a lot of it. But I knew there are many people who, with great reluctance, voted in favor of demolition if he would do certain things. And I know Mr. Ogden here was very sad about voting in favor of it. But there was a bare majority of us who did do so. But I think your criticism is valid. Yeah. And I think that correction would serve the public interest.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have any other thoughts? We've got potential nominations for historic preservation awards.
Yes. So yeah,
do we have some?
No, we didn't receive any applications, but we also didn't solicit any this year, and usually that's how we drum them up. I did talk to the building department. Unfortunately, we couldn't come up with any other ideas anyways. I think this sort of comes back to maybe some creative ways to recognize some people for their work. To be honest, though, too, we haven't even, as a commission in the last year, heard a lot of COA applications. Usually that's kind of where I turn to for some inspiration, and we just haven't heard many of them. There was one that Commissioner Pritz, and I forget their address there, but that side addition, but that was pretty minimal work, and that's usually where I turn to. So if there's any nominations at all or any ideas, we're happy to send a letter or make a phone call to invite those people to apply. We've run out the timeline for applications, but the commission can present an award as it sees fit.
I, for one, also favor in a year where there isn't a project that rises to the level of the award, and it's not a knock on the community or on anyone. It's just, not every year someone does something that's worthy of that sort of recognition. I'd prefer to give out nothing.
Yes.
Than to search so hard to give out something.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is kind of what we've done in the past. That's why in some instances, like I believe last year, we gave out two of the highest level because we were presented with two projects that were just really worthy of that recognition, that folks went above and beyond in their restoration.
To that extent, too, and to Commissioner Press's point, the commission could choose to restructure how it does the award. Maybe an annual call for applications is not how you guys want to do it, and you want to give an award when you see fit or invite an application you see fit. That's perfectly fine, too.
Sure. Yep. Now, one of the other things before we sort of leave the general topic of what do we do to further protect significant properties, I have had some conversations with village staff and officials about what I believe is the need for an explicit clarification of our role post-denial of a certificate of appropriateness. That I want to make I believe it's appropriate that we make absolutely crystalline that the up to 6 month delay is not merely intended to be a slap on the wrist, but is, as I believe it's presently written, but it can always be made more explicit, intended to foster discussions led by the commission as to viable alternatives. That's really the purpose, to find solutions rather than just to slap someone down and say, we think you're bad, 6 month penalty, no soup for you. And that's because otherwise the 6 month is really, it's just punitive, and that's silly.
This was the whole point where we sort of chased our tails last time, where it was, well, does it have to all be kind of set now and then self-executing, or can we continue to engage? And you'd like to make it clear that
absolutely
continued engagement is appropriate, or at least something we can do, because I think what we got from the village attorney the last time was that it had to sort of be, I'm just calling it self-executing. We had to sort of say, well, here today we're making a ruling that, and then you're kind of on your own, but we weren't allowed to kind of continue to engage even if we wanted to and they wanted to.
Yeah.
So, if I could clarify the village attorney's opinion, the way I understood it, there was there are kind of two separate things, in the sense that the ordinance is clear that the commission can continue to compelled the conversation to continue about other alternatives throughout the 6-month delay period or however long the commission so chooses. But what couldn't be extended that entire time is the decision-making process. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was what was unique in this circumstance, where because of the conditions we wanted, the commission wanted in some respect for the ability to make a decision to continue, and the village attorney opined that it called for some end there.
Right.
Then we went to the period, which still could have entailed discussion, certainly, but not any further decision.
Right. Good clarification. Right. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I know I was confused at the time by the sense of where our role ended.
I thought we understood that. So maybe it was just me, but we stopped the conversation at that point. Was the part that sort of. I get what you're saying, Dave, but the whole point that I don't understand is what we would have done to proceed with the conversation. I mean, we had the most unsatisfactory decision any of us could have made. We were at each other's throats relative to the vote. We made a vote that, like Al said, squeaked by, that,
right.
You know, David, I thought, was going to punch himself in the head with, you know, because, you know, making, and surprised all of us. So I mean, it's just, and then we did nothing with it.
Right.
So I get the point of what you're saying, but I'm not sure what we would have really been able to do in that circumstance. Because we were presented with an opportunity to continue to do something. We didn't.
But after 6 months, we're no longer in the game, as far as I'm concerned.
No, but
from the developer's point of view.
We weren't
at
the 6-month point when we took the vote.
If I can add one thought to that. I think there's a couple of things at play here that I'd just like to add historically to it. I think some of the, and correct me if I'm wrong, some of that section of the ordinance originated from the experience the commission had with the Mars Mansion, and the fact that that developer had no interest and refused to
right.
even attend a meeting or hear
mm-hmm.
the application.
Correct.
So this required somebody to come before
correct.
The commission and continue to have that conversation.
Right.
The other thing that I think made the 747 William case unique was the fact that the time from which we became aware, and you know, the initial application as opposed to the completed application, and then the decision was about 4.5-5 months. And so there was a good deal of conversation that happened in that period too, you know, that maybe started to exhaust some of those options. Whereas prior, you know, I know the concern was that somebody couldn't come tear down a property in the middle of the night without having heard all the other alternatives or discussed other alternatives with the commission. Some of the other alternatives were discussed in these various other meetings before, you know, if you guys remember, we had full rooms and the owner before an application was even completed, where we talked about some of these alternatives.
No, but I mean, the point I'm trying to make, and I don't want this to come across as a criticism of us, but it turns out that there was a willing buyer out there.
Sure.
And we had a guy who
wow,
said, you know, well, we don't know, but we didn't make the connection, did we? So I think the idea of putting, like, this idea of putting it on the website makes that thread happen. But are there other, you know, and I know Carly has a hard stop tonight for tonight's meeting, but maybe at the next meeting, just like we're discussing things we can do up front before a property is sold, we should be talking about things, you know, like this property you're talking about that's, you know, that's being promoted as a teardown. You know, what can we be doing now to connect somebody to that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because is there another one of these guys sitting out there saying, you know, I'd love the opportunity to fix
that? What really would have been... Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you didn't.
What really would have been great is if during that some peer, you know, the time we bought the 747, we, or the extended we, our friends and our friends' friends and the historic preservation community such that it exists, could have identified somebody who said, you know, and there, you know, a lot of people who have $1 billion, somebody who would have come in and said, yeah, you know, I'm actually willing to spend 450 or 500 or whatever Sarvis's number was by the time we got to where we were, you know, because that's what needed to happen, and it didn't happen. And I got a couple indications, again, through friends and friends of friends, that, oh, well, I talked to so-and-so at this arts league or that community, or and who they think maybe they've got someone. But, you know, it just never happened. And it's not a knock on anybody. It's a hard to find someone who wants to buy a $500,000 house.
Communications take time.
Yeah.
I've come to the conclusion, and I've spoken to Kathy Aducci also, that I think we should extend our time to 1 year.
Yeah, I agree.
Now,
the
point is why? First of all, because give these communications time to fill out, to read. This takes a long time to do. A year is also what I'm hoping is, another incentive I have is, if there's a 1 year delay, we all know time is money, maybe we can have some say as to what goes up if that goes down. None of us want it to go down, but at least we might have some say, real say, as to what goes up and have some, and I think that would give us some time. So that's why I think we should be given a year and not just 6 months.
So I passionately agree with that, but what I'm saying is maybe there's a flip side to that coin, which is besides wanting a longer period, maybe there's something we're not plugged into that we should be plugged into. And I don't know if we could find that, right? I mean, this listing on the webpage, I think, is trying to find that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This the idea of maybe when you Google a property, because you do Google a property and it comes up and says historic property in River Forks, that's a great idea because that's another way to plug people into this. But, you know, there's got to be something beyond like a journal, you know, some way to reach a broader audience,
right,
that says if you're looking to buy, you know, what if we had a web page that said looking to buy a historic property in River Forest? You know, I mean, it's that naked, you know,
so
there's a listing of those.
One of the things that I try to do every time I meet someone who is someone who believes in preservation, as we all do, is to sort of ask the question, what do? How do you get ahead of the curve? And there are a number of people who are sort of putting their minds to it, and I would invite others to do that. I think, though, there's one point that is missing, and I don't know how we address this. And that is, in order for the process to work, particularly under the current 6-month maximum time limit, you really need an owner who has got some flexibility. And again, I don't want to bash the order 747 William, but factually, David Reno Ogden literally spent 4 hours of his time in his office and provided sketches, concept sketches, and said, this is how you can take this property and you can reconfigure it for modern use by altering the front and the rear. And there was, to the best of my knowledge, we never heard any response to that at all.
But we have no authority to, you know what I mean?
I understand.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying.
I think our best option in this kind of a situation is not to try to convert the heathen, so to speak, but is to take and to find somebody with a more common need. And that's what I'm trying to say. I like this idea of trying to, again, it's just getting the information out there in a better way. Maybe when we're thinking about what this website page is, what are we going to put on this website? Only properties?
The thought is it would be significant properties and properties that have won awards. We give out four or five preservation awards, huh?
That are for sale?
Yes, they're for sale.
I think there's probably 8 or 9 right now.
Yeah.
But these two ideas combined strike me as flip sides of the same coin. You know, if we were to say, lengthen the time, call that stick, and then get the word out, call that carrot. But it's like we want the time not to be jerks and impose our will, but so that these productive things have time to occur, and we have not only the things that we already know, but some ideas for some other things that ought to happen during that time period.
Well, and then if you tie it to, and then you're educating people before they buy the property.
Yep.
Now you've done everything you can. People know when they buy a property, it's significant. They if they're looking for a property, they have a way to get it. If they're going to try to tear it down, they're going to face a situation which the purpose isn't to penalize them, but it does have that effect and does give us a longer runway.
Well,
and that longer runway lets us plug into networks that allow us to, after denying a certificate of appropriateness, get more people looking at this as a problem, right?
A longer delay, it's also dynamic. I mean, a longer delay creates a bigger piece, a more significant, actionable piece of information, which means buyers are going to be more attuned. It's something more important to know. I mean, imagine the extreme, right? Imagine a 10-year delay. I'm not advocating for it.
Buyers
are going to find that out. Or if they buy and then, holy moly, they're going to like back out. You know, it would be a market moving piece of information. Now, 1 year is different. And again, no one's advocating 10 years. I just use that as an example. But broadening that, having a longer delay will have a positive effect on that information getting out because it becomes a more relevant market-moving piece of information.
Well, clearly we have people in the community, right, who would be interested in, you know, making that story prevalent and all that sort of thing. So I guess this is, I think, a good conversation because I think we're starting, but we haven't finished this idea of how do we surround this problem with information.
Before we lose Carla, there's one point I want to make, and thank you very much for staying over a little bit. Where we're kind of headed with this process is considering some tweaks to the ordinance. What I would like to do is I would like to fully vet and discuss amongst ourselves any tweaks we want, because I think it's appropriate once we reach a consensus to put everything in one basket at one time, as opposed to piecemealing it in a series, because I think there would be a lessened appetite for a sequential series of changes. Then there would be one saying, look, based upon our experience, we think this would make some sense. Okay. Thanks, Carla. Be well. Good Memorial Day.
See the fluffy one again.
Just one quick point, and that is these four websites are specialized in historic homes. They've only been on for about 6 weeks, four weeks, and I've had 2,500 hits.
Wow.
Nobody's knocking at my door, but it's interesting that there are people looking, you know, they're kind of going through it. It's a specialized website, and it costs $50.
Could you send that information to Jonathan, and he can send it to all of us? We can't commute. You know, if more than two of us discuss any one thing, we have violated the Open Meetings Act. And that we don't want to do. If you could send that information so that we can sort of just Google off into our merry interest and see what's out there.
The question, $50 for 3 months?
$50 for 3 months.
And you got 2,500 hits?
I've had 2,500 hits as of a week ago.
We got $5,000. I'd be willing to invest $50, $100, $200 for a year and put those on if we could get. Wow, I think that's bang for the buck. Let's do it. That's a good use of that money.
The guy who said he was looking for a historic home to rehab.
$60.
Have you talked to him?
No, I haven't.
It's still worth it.
Did somebody talk to him? How do we know about this guy?
He contacted the village, untold.
This is the attorney?
This is an architect.
The architect who wanted to buy a historic property for his family
city.
And, he identified him.
City. Yeah, no, that was a new story to me.
Okay.
I don't remember who told the story.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Who did you get that from?
There's enough people I've been talking to. I'll
the, the reason, that, yeah. Because I'd yeah. be interested in asking that person how they tried to find a historic property
sure.
in
sure.
River Forest. Right?
Yeah, makes perfectly good
same
sense.
Same as Brian going out and talking right. to the realtors, right? right? Let's
yeah.
ask this person, when you were trying to buy something, what did you do?
Yeah.
And if he says, I went to the MLS and never went to the website, if he says the first place I went was the website, it's like fantastic.
Well, yeah,
have we got a deal for you.
My general sense is the two things that people know about is they know nationally about the Frank Lloyd Wright Conservancy.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
locally, they know about Landmarks Illinois. The difficulty with Landmarks Illinois is it's got to be endangered, and the typically are grand properties,
yeah.
many of which are not residential.
Yeah.
So if you want to buy a church in the city and you want to save it, you're going to be on that list. But you're not necessarily, if you are in a West suburban community, even near West,
yeah.
that's got a historic property, you're not necessarily going to make that list.
But to Brian's point, people...
Yeah.
Google houses, they,
sure.
they, you know, the modern way that they buy houses would be good for us to maybe plug into.
Yeah.
Find a way to plug in.
Okay. We got
five
grand to do it
with. I have a few items to run through. Thank you. Just to be clear on the map, a couple of items.
Map.
One,
I know you said you didn't want to, but I'm going to ask you anyways. Commissioner Presses, if you could run us through the changes in that paragraph, just so that there...
I can't. Listen, here's the deal. I edit copy for a living. I have 20 tiny changes.
Does anybody want to hear them, or do you want me to run with what you got?
You'd be nuts if you want to hear me read into, like, add a comma, delete an ampersand,
you
right,
can,
and.
I don't see any objections, so you can give that to me. And
okay.
We'll go with that.
Some of it is actually some work for you, just because, like, for example, we say Robert C. Spencer in half the places in Robert Spencer with no C, and others. We say Talmadge ampersand Watson in half the places in Talmadge and Watson.
That's all helpful.
So I just tried to flag one thing someone should do, and maybe this just hasn't happened yet, but is run a search for all the repeat words Frank Lloyd Wright, Talmadge and Watson, or Talmadge, so you get all the different, and make sure we're doing it the same way. Spencer, so we, you know,
okay.
If you take the words that we're using again and again, you know, mid-century modern, and make sure, is it capitalized or is it not? Is it mid-hyphen century? Or are those three words, or, you know, just to get it all consistent.
Sure.
So I flagged, like I said, 20 examples like that. None of them are a great big deal. You could ignore all of them, and I don't think anyone would commit us of, you know, accuse us of malpractice here. But might as well get it right. If you you looked at it quizzically, but
this is the one that I looked at quizzically.
Oh yeah, so they're so tiny. This is just a missing word. We say street view of house. Maybe that's like very economical, but there's like a the missing maybe. And if you don't think there is, if street view of house is sort of the new lingo. That's cool, too.
Of the house, yeah, sure.
So I suppose you caught the witch.
I caught, a couple of that
lack
witch
of a comma.
Errors, yeah.
A comma witch, or that.
Right.
Perfect. No, this is perfect.
The one is fine.
That makes perfect sense. So I'm going to include those in this change of edits, which now includes numbers and some grammatical things.
Cool.
Okay, what I would like to do is I'd like to make these changes. I can circulate that again. I'd like to take the map and to the village board on June the 11th and present it to them for some thumbs up so that they've seen it, they know what we're doing. I think it's a good public moment for the commission with the board, and then just a couple of thumbs up is all we need for me to, other than copy proofing, to print it, and I think that'd be helpful. Any objections to that?
No.
I'm happy to present that to the board on the commission's behalf, but if there's the chairman or any other commissioner that wants to present it, that's certainly great too. If anybody would like to be present, that's great too. Up to any of you guys, how you want to handle it. Different commissioners handle it in different ways. You know, sometimes sustainability commissions.
When is it?
I believe that their summer meeting schedule would mean that's June the 11th.
Can you send us a notice when you find out? So
absolutely,
for sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, subject to the other commissioners' views, because I'm not here to step on anyone's toes. I think it would be nice for you've done so much of the work here. I think it would be nice for you to be able to show it off and get that, you know, credit. I don't mean to overstate it. And if someone wanted to be there with you, or, you know, obviously great. But
sure,
it's good by me for you to take the lead. But again,
appreciate that. But certainly, you guys wrote all the descriptions. You picked all the properties. There's individual work in it, so all's well there. Okay,
it is June 11th.
Yeah,
June 11th, and the next one's the 25th.
And that's why I say with their summer meeting schedule, sometimes it's only once a month. Sometimes I only get one shot at getting the whole group together during the summer. So I believe June 11th is their June meeting. Okay, so that's it on the map. Yours, I don't know if you want to take your proposal for putting them on the website to the board at the same time, or how you want to handle that. I guess you don't have to decide right now. I don't mean to put you on the spot with that.
No.
But happy to do that, or however you'd like, you know, me to assist with that. Happy to make that.
Do we want to further discuss at the next meeting, or do we have a general sense as to this being a positive we want to get going sooner rather than later?
I mean, I just view it as utterly uncontroversial. Like, I view it as costless. As long as we think we can keep it up to date so it's not all wrong, so that in 2 years we don't have a bunch of houses that were for sale in 2018. Other than that, I view it as totally so totally uncontroversial.
Michael?
Okay with that.
Okay. Yeah. Done. Same time.
Okay. So
I'll be there on the 11th, then.
Okay. Yeah. If you can't make it, Dave, let me know. We'll figure something out.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, perfect. My last order of business just is just an update. There's a couple of things that were kind of brewing that came to a head, and I think that it's great for the commission as well. So one of the things that the village board has set as a FY19 goal that we're now in to take a look at communications wise is more pivoting to video as so many organizations are. So we've looked for some new opportunities to integrate video in the village's general communications, and then there was the request from Mr. Burns about advertising some of that work and things like that, and so the staff had the idea to maybe do a couple of short videos on some historic properties. So where we're starting is we've engaged a resident who does this professionally to help us out with that, and he's gonna help us to produce those videos and make that all possible at a reasonable price for the village. So we're starting with 558 Franklin and 146 Keystone, the award winners from last year. Like I said, I told Dave earlier, I just think it's a slam dunk in so many different ways. You guys are looking for publicity on people right. that are taking care of homes. Right. The board's looking for some videos and ways to show village pride. It right. does all those things. The homeowners were great storytellers when they came to us. The houses are super visually pleasing for video. It does have the historic preservation, but also just the natural property village pride thing there. So I'm excited about that project. That's something that we're looking to do in early June, actually, with everybody and make that happen in the next couple months here. So yeah, absolutely.
Great.
So
that's just the long and short way of saying that, like watching a dog swimming, there's a lot going on underneath the water that you don't see above the water.
Yeah.
To try to get the process going.
Before and after photos, people. All that stuff. It just seems like a match made in heaven in a lot of ways there, so I'm excited about that.
That's very cool.
And on top of that, since our last meeting, Al's second installment was made available. And so, and I have 3 and 4 completed on his part. I'm completing some of my pieces there. So in the next month or so, I think those will be available. And then, between those videos, which cover 40 properties-ish across the village, plus a couple, special spots, I think we have started to have a nice archive of other information.
Let me know when it's ready, and I'll write another letter to the Wednesday Journal.
There you go.
And I'll tell them essentially, these are available and where to get them.
Great.
We already discussed, is there... I have limited computer skills. I tried to look for those on the village site, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
I could get it by just going to YouTube and putting on Al Popowitz. But I don't want to go that way. I want people to go through the village and do it. That's what this is about, the village. So if there's some way that we can eat more easily, and there are people, a lot of people like me with limited skills, there's got to be a way that people like myself can...
A couple things there. One, I can definitely look into trying to reorganize a little bit to make it more visible, bring it to the top of the website, if you will, instead of maybe it's too far down now to find. Two, I'd also note that in addition to being on YouTube, it's hosted on our Facebook site there, too.
Oh.
It's gotten a lot of views there, which is
good.
A benefit. And then it was also shared in the e-news, which has a decent readership in the village.
It's getting out.
That's that. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Anybody have anything else?
No.
Other than a good Memorial Day?
Okay.
Do I hear a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye. Thanks all.
Thanks, everyone.